Hi, my name is Claire and I'm the mother of three teenagers with FASD.
I'm Jessica, a PhD researcher specialising in educational interventions for children with FASD.
And together we are the hosts of Spotlight on FASD, the UK's first podcast dedicated to shining a spotlight on fetal alcohol spectrum disorders.
FASD is a condition caused by prenatal alcohol exposure that affects hundreds of thousands of children across the UK.
And we're here to bring these conversations out of the shadows and make sure that no one living with FASD feels alone.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Spotlight on FASD. I am flying solo this week. Claire has been unable to join me, but I am thrilled to be joined by Laura from Mama Systems. Laura is joining us all the way from Dallas, and we are going to hear about everything that she does in her business and as a mother. We're going to hear about her story, and we're really excited to do so. So Laura, as I said, she's the owner of Mama Systems. She's the mother of 10 children. 10 children. So Laura and I were just chatting before I hit record there, and her and her husband had 4 of their own. And then in just 5 years, they added 6 more children to the family, 3 biologically and 3 through adoption. So her 3 adopted children have an FASD diagnosis, and that's what brought Laura into this line of work and this community. So she is passionate and dedicated about helping women bring more peace to their home, and they, through the work that she does, design customized systems that help families run more smoothly, which we're all really interested to hear about, and with a focus on reducing a mother's daily workload. That's Laura's speciality. So coming from a place of, as a parent of children, young people with FASD, and specialist, a professional in helping homes run more smoothly, everybody needs to hear what you've got to say, Laura. You are the perfect guest right now. And I cannot wait to have this conversation and have you share all of this story with our listeners. So thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I feel so honored to be here.
Great. We're really excited. So can you just very quickly tell us, Mama Systems, what is it?
Yes. So Mama Systems is my business that I created. And it started from a journey of complete chaos in our home. We had, we had our 4 people, we're doing great. And then we ended up having our 5th biological and adopting a sibling group of 3 within 6 months. And so we had 5 little people, 4 and under, all in diapers. And every day I remember, and I didn't know at this time that they had FASD. So I didn't know we were dealing with like special needs or higher needs kiddos. I would just stand up against the wall and think, if I can just make it to bedtime, we're going to be okay. Like if we can just get everybody alive and to bed where they're safe in their bed, we're going to be great. And after a while, I realized that that's not really sustainable, that that's not really how I want to live. Right. And so, I read a ton of books and ton of blog posts and everything, but nobody had systems or ways to organize life when you have some homeschooling, some in public school, therapist in and out of your home all day, caseworkers for foster care in and out. Like, I just felt like our house was a crazy house, and I did not like that. And nobody else had experienced that. I know that people have experienced that, but nobody had like written anything about it, or I couldn't find anything. And so it's like, you know what? We've got to figure this out on our own. And so we really had to sit down and figure out what's important to us, what's not important to us, what can we kind of get rid of altogether? And we needed to create systems around that. And after we were able to walk through that process of doing that, we've just been able to have a lot of peace in our home. And it's been very life-giving. People will walk in our home and they're like, you have 10 kids? It doesn't feel like you have 10 kids. Like, I know, it's kind of great. And not that we're all living like Mary Poppins all the time, by any stretch of the imagination, but there is a calmness and a peace because we know what's expected. And yeah. So once I figured all of that out, we realized that that's duplicable, and that same process can help every mom in their unique circumstances really bring peace and order to their home. So, yeah.
So within 6 months, baby number 5 and 3 sibling group through adoption.
Yes.
That sounds intense.
It was pretty intense. We had had the oldest in our home. He had come to us straight from the hospital, and we had him from 0 to 8 months, and then he went back to bio mom, and she subsequently had two more kids. And at that time, so we had three, and then we had Andrew, and then he went back to mom. We had our fourth. We moved up to Seattle, and then we had our fifth, and she had two more kids. And so it clearly quickly added up. And when they were taken away again, we adopted all three of them. We moved back to Dallas to be able to do that. And so we moved across the country. We're living in a rent home, bought this house. We're renovating this house. And we even got one of their other siblings in for a hot minute as a newborn. And so we had him for a while as well, but he went back to mom as well. So,
So you have foster parents?
Yes, we did foster care.
Okay, so that's how numbers grew quickly. But to an extent, you had an open door to that.
Yes.
And, you know, took these children in. But like you said, in your introduction, you didn't know what you were dealing with. You weren't aware of higher needs. Were you prepared as a foster carer for accommodating those sort of needs?
Yeah, so that's a very loaded question.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I love to talk about this. We didn't know. We were told very little about, I didn't know really at all about fetal alcohol.
Yeah.
We knew that, you know, drug damage and all of that would happen in utero, but the way the trainings were, it made it sound like, well, yes, that's going to affect them a little bit, but then once they're safe, once they're in your home, once you try to attach, once all these things, then you're going to see them catch up. You're going to see them, like, they won't be delayed anymore. They'll feel happy. They'll like all these things. Right. So it's kind of like this magical, if you do all this work, then this, and it's going to be great. And so we kept waiting for this to happen because we were doing all of the work and it never happened. And we're like, they're still really behind. And our like little babies would pass them up. And so we finally started doing like medical testing. And that's when we learned, after one of our buddies had a seizure, we learned about, the slow processing speed. And one of our therapists mentioned something about fetal alcohol. And I was like, oh, mom, you know, I very naively, mom told me she didn't drink. And so I naively believed her. And so we kept doing testing. And the more I kept learning about it, I was like, oh my gosh, every single one of these things meets every single one of our kids. Like, I was just blown away by the fact that nobody informed us about that this was even a possibility, and that this is not just something that affects in utero, and it's not something that's just like right after birth. It's forever, forever. And there's definitely things we can put in place, and there's definitely things that, yes, we can heal a lot of things, but it's forever and it's brain damage, and we need to be having more conversations about that. So
yeah, definitely. And that was, like you said, that was a loaded question. And just for a bit of context, where that came from, my parents are foster carers, and in a similar position, you know, they learned about FASD through me and the work that I do. And my mum would come to me and be like, oh, it was mentioned in training last week. Like, mentioned in training? Like, yeah, they said FASD. Well, great. That's it. Like, okay, all right. And, you know, I pick up things, and you know, I'm not really aware of this little one's story and his background and his parents' story, but there's things that I pick up and I'm like, has anybody explored this? Has anybody mentioned this? Because we know how prevalent FASD is within the care experience population, or there's good estimates, and it was never mentioned. So my mum starts asking questions to the professionals and they're like, oh, well, yeah, you know. And it's all breezed over very, very casually. So it was interesting. So, you know, what I was asking really was to gain an understanding if it was the same in the US, really, if foster care preparation, I guess, is as relaxed around FASD and that pre-birth history as it is.
It really fires me up, because it's the, I make up that the numbers are probably about the same over there, that 70% of kids in care have some form of FASD, and you're going through training and you're giving up your life, and you may not realize it at the moment, but you're giving up your life to take in these kids, and you're taking on a responsibility for the rest of their lives. Like, not just like, oh, you have another daughter, but I'm like, these guys are going to be living with me for the rest of their lives. And it feels, I don't feel like I was prepared for that. It would have been one thing if I would have known that at the beginning and been like, hey, this is a possibility, and been like, okay, well, we can deal with that. We can handle that, whatever. But it's kind of like they're trying to hide it, or I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's like, hey, we don't want to tell people about this because then nobody's going to want to adopt. I'm not sure if that's the line that we're trying not to cross, but I think it would be so much better if we're honest with people of like, hey, this is a real possibility, this brain damage. I'm really hoping that you can edit this out. Okay. Yeah. One second. Let me go. Our babysitter canceled today, and so I'm like, you just play on the computer for right now. That's what we're doing. Noah Jack. Okay. So sorry.
This is, again, the reason why I'm my parents. This is
what happens. Perfect. Yeah. Yes. Because I think the reason it frustrates me so much is because there are services out there. There are things that we can put in place, but parents have to know what they're dealing with. They have to be able to understand so they can have grace and compassion and be able to approach their kiddos how they need to be approached, you know? And I don't know, you know, this is not everybody's experience, but our experience has been that behavior has just increased over time. And the way that things are put on to parents of like, if you attach, if you do this, then this. And when I'm not getting this factor over here that I'm like trying to strive for because I'm doing X, Y, and Z, then the only thing I have to blame is myself. So I must not be doing something right. I'm like, all that guilt, all that shame, it must be me because it's not working. I must be failing. I'm not a good mom to them. Like, those are the questions that I'm like, that it's so much better to go in what eyes wide open and knowing what we're going into. So,
and I know that professional, like, I am aware of it being that professional opinion over here in some cases where it's we'll just hide this information and get the adoption through and everything will be fine, because if we make people aware, they'll shy away and these individuals become unadoptable and we don't have space for them in our system and blah 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 blah. And that's something that Claire is very passionate about and would be very fired up about if she was part of this conversation, because she's walked through something similar with her own adoption, and it took her 10 years to gain the diagnosis that, you know, the information was there all along, but 10 years of struggles to get there. It's deceitful.
It is very deceitful.
And no wonder people then become hesitant of adoption, because, you know, they're just afraid of being lied to. It's not about what these children have experienced, because, like you say, if we know there are supports out there and we can learn, and those supports and things are growing very quickly. And even things like yourself and the work that you're doing, you know, bring all of these things together, and it's a very, very different story.
Yeah. And I would like to say that it's not always, it feels deceitful on my end just because mm-hmm. the little amount that they talked about it. And so that's why it feels mm-hmm. like, it's like marrying somebody with terminal cancer and they don't tell you about it. Right. Yeah. Like I probably still would have chosen to marry them, but it would be helpful to know that information. Right. Yeah. And not that this is terminal cancer, but It just feels like that kind of like I'm bonding my life with you forever and I'm committing to take care of you forever. And I want to know all the things that could be a possibility here. And I get that a lot of times, like the foster care system didn't have a record of mom drinking. Like I had to dig through information about past CPS cases and all those things to gather that information. And so they weren't necessarily saying like, everything's great with these kids. They had perfect in utero care. Like there was none of that, but it is the, let's tell the full story of what could be going on here.
Yeah. And I think people go into adoption, you know, I've not been there personally, but people from what I know go into adoption being very open to these stories. You know, there's not been perfect in utero care that you would provide for your own biological children. You know, their story's different. That's how they're there. That's how they're waiting to be adopted. They're waiting to join another family because, you know, their start hasn't been what you would hope. So, you know, it's always, the thinking's already there. So provide the information. It's really disappointing really to hear that the situation's the same in the US in many cases. And as you say, this is a generalization, but it's a very, very similar theme here. Okay. So you figured that out, you walked that journey, you welcomed these three children into your home and they became part of your family, and for a split second another sibling joined as well. Are you still fostering?
No, we are too large of a family to foster.
Oh, of course, yeah, because there's a number limit on it, isn't there? Yeah, no. So that part of the system.
We're complete.
You're complete, and that, I imagine, has allowed you to put a lot of the structure in place and get to where you are today, where people walk into your home, really have 10 kids? Because everybody knows what's going on. And that, as we all know, that's an environment that individuals with FASD thrive in. All the expectations are there. Systems are laid out. The structures are in place. I feel very, very safe.
Yes.
The previous episode, I recorded another interview. We're talking about how all the systems and things that you can put in place that are recommended for individuals with FASD will never, ever harm somebody without FASD and are very likely to benefit them. So have you found that your biological children flourish with these?
Absolutely. I find that children are dying to know what's happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think any person can gather that just from a little conversation. Like, where are we going? What's happening? Like, what are we doing today? Like all the little questions, they want to know what they can expect of the day. And so I know that we cannot control a good majority of the things that happen, especially with our FASD kiddos. Mm-hmm. But if we can give everyone else in our home like that sense of peace and calm, and we know what's expected and we have this baseline of where we're supposed to be, it's easier to get there. So if things fly off the handle, let's just throw out a fun example, because I think this community would understand it and no one else maybe would. But if we have things in place in our home, so we have our kind of structures and routines and all of those things, and we have a game plan, a safety game plan for one of our oldest has just real anger and rage issues. And so like he one time put his fist through the glass of the door. And I mean, of course, that's a huge mess, disrupts the whole evening, but we're able to clean that up, to deal with that. And everyone else has been kind of guarded from that because we have a safety plan in place. We have things in place that we can jump back to and get back to that baseline rather quickly, with just different people coming in and helping with the situation, and then the cleanup and all the things that happen. And not only that, but just the, as a mother and taking care of all the little details of meal planning and all the things that we as moms take care of going into the next day, and like even the hassle of like having to order a new door and getting it installed and all of that, that's, I didn't have plans for that, right? So all of that's now hoisted onto my day. but it doesn't feel like it's overwhelming in the fact that my child just put a fist through the door and all of that. So don't let me paint this too pretty for you, but we have everything else is taken care of. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like, oh my gosh, what am I going to feed these people for dinner? All the laundry, the house is a mess. Like all of those things are already taken care of. So that way when things like this happen, I can just turn my attention to that and focus on that for a hot minute, yeah. Get that taken care of. And then we can move on and get back to our baseline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned this baseline, and that's how, is that sort of where you function day to day, like this baseline, this is where we're at. This is standard operating.
Yes. Standard operating procedures. Yes.
Yeah. Like this is where we're at. And so what does that look like? I mean, you know, obviously without giving too much away, because I know you work with people through your business, but I know the work that you do is very customizable, and so it'll be individual for every household. But, you know, do you have like a box of fairies or something that comes and does all your laundry and your meal preps?
And you have fairies.
Yeah.
That is how we get things done. Wouldn't that be so great? All the little animals from the forest come in and help us. No. So just having a plan is kind of where a lot of us are we're living reactionary lives. We're going from thing to thing, taking the kid to school, coming home, finding a flooded laundry room, then cleaning that up, doing whatever, trying to get laundry done. Then we got to pick up a kid now. And we're just living from thing to thing to thing. And my goal when working with moms is to really create routines and rhythms around our day to have anchor points where we can take care of ourselves and get the care and time we need for ourselves. So in the morning, what that looks like for me is when I wake up and I go read for a little bit before I get kids up from school, but having that structured into my day. So that way I can fill myself up before the onslaught of children. And I'm not a morning person. So I need my cup of coffee and I need to read before I interact with anyone or it won't be pretty. So having that done and then being able to get kids up and having that connection time with them before they go off to school. And then at lunchtime, the ones that are home, and because we homeschool some still, at lunchtime, having that anchor point of like touching base with them and having specific things that I want to be intentional with them on at home, like building character and different things like that. We do that at the lunch table. And a lot of this revolves around mealtime because, you know, we all revolve around mealtime and that's something that's already in our lives. And then our last touch point of the day, well, kind of two, but one is our 5 o'clock jobs at our house. And we set a timer for 5 o'clock. And at that time I go in and I get dinner ready and everyone else has a 5 o'clock job. And so their jobs are to prep for the next day if they have anything school-wise that they need to get done, laying out clothes, anything like that. And then they each have an area that they're in charge of cleaning up. And then they each have a job for dinner. And so we have kids setting things on the table, like cups and silverware or whatever, and helping me bring things to the table. And so what happens is it is kind of like magical fairies. It's this magical moment where I'm not in there in the kitchen by myself, because I've been here before too, where I'm in the kitchen and I'm like ticked off because they're watching TV and messing up the room that I just cleaned up all day. And I'm in here making dinner and then I'm gonna have to clean it all up by myself. But instead it's this beautiful team mentality of, hey, I'm cooking dinner. They're helping get stuff on the table. The house is getting picked up at the same time. And so I'm not taking on all of the responsibility because that's not, we're a team. Like we all live here. We all eat here. We all exist here and we can all do our part. So that's one of our goals. And then our final is at dinner time. It's our final anchor. And we do highs and lows and just really are able to connect with everybody at that time. But just having those anchors throughout the day to have touch points and check in on people and see how we're doing is really helpful.
Yeah. So
I didn't hear anything if something happened. Oh, you sweet pumpkin.
We're editing anyway, so. Hey, what is the matter? You got a full tummy?
No,
come on. Not paying you any attention, is that the problem?
Oh.
You're not keen on the work from home kind of juggling, huh?
Oh, he's so sweet.
Are you gonna settle again? Super chilled because, which is a blessing, because my toddler is not super chilled. She has an energy that, and we're barely hitting the toddler stage as well, so that's going to get interesting.
We got this. No, no worries.
Yeah. So your day, you're revolving your day around these anchor points and like where you touch base and you have these moments. But there's two things I wanted to pick up on there, really. The team mentality, like, my goodness, that's so, so important, and something that, you know, I've been working on myself with professional support, is not feeling like it's all on me, because I have a bit of a problem with that. Like, you know, I don't know if it's a bit of a control thing, but it's, you know, struggling to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I guess, I don't know whether it's the age of my children, but there's less of a team mentality. And that there, I think that's the absolute key to having so many people, to any household really, but to having so many people in your home. Like, you couldn't do it. And I know when Claire messaged me to say that she wasn't able to make it, she actually said, can you ask her how the hell she does this? You've just explained, like, right there, like, you take that team mentality, everybody has their expectation, everybody, you know, they know what their roles are, and it's not mum's job to feed everybody and do all the things that comes along with that, because from deciding what you're eating, I mean, that's a job in itself, groceries, making sure the food is there for what that meal is, prepping the food, cooking the food, laying the table, like you say, like all of these things, then cleaning it up. But to do that solo whilst everybody else is relaxing and watching TV and like reading and doing all the things that you would love to be doing. And I think that's, I think we've got society to blame for that.
A little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just, and like you said, you're homeschooling as well, so there's that on top of it, which, you know, that's a job.
Yeah.
And, you know, the mums who go out to work as well, and all of these different things, and you're just being pulled in all these directions that without you know, it's not healthy. It's just not healthy to not have that team mentality. And something that really, really jumped out is when you said, like, you start your day with your time for you, which I'm sure if you're not a morning person, it would be very easy to be like, no, I'm having an extra 30 minutes in bed, like, just let me rest, like, leave me alone, let me be.
Yes.
But to be so intentional with your actions and your time and the way that you start your day, and no, I'm getting up at this time, I'm doing this for myself, because it's healthier than an extra 30 minutes of sleep, to just start my day in the right headspace, the right mindset, and get going. And like, do you get interrupted? Or do people know?
Oh, in the morning?
Yeah.
Well, I wake up before they do, so that I don't get interrupted. Sometimes there'll be a snuggly baby that comes and snuggles up with me, but I really have to talk to myself in bed, because I would love nothing more than just to sleep. Yeah. And so when that alarm goes off at 5:45, I tell myself, I'm like, Laura, this is your time. You must get up. Like, that's what I say to myself, because there's another little voice that's much louder at times. It says, just sleep a little bit longer. I did want to go back and touch on the team mentality with our FASD kids, because I know that that can be such a struggle. Like, several, two of ours have ODD as well, oppositional defiance disorder. And so everything is just, no, I don't want to. No, I don't want to. I don't even want, you know. I don't need to give an example, because I'm sure that so many of your people know. yeah. So I have found kind of the key to that is really setting those expectations and really making them clear. And we do that with, like, hey, we don't switch up jobs often, like our little chores or whatever. We don't switch this up often. So that way everybody is very clear on what they're supposed to be doing and when they're supposed to be doing it. Because if we're always changing, it's way too much for me to keep up with. And I don't know what we decided last week, but we're not doing that. Every day, same thing. You know that every day you come and you put the cups on the table. And it's not a difficult job by any stretch of the imagination, but you would think I was asking him to climb Mount Everest or something, right? And so having those very clear expectations and then just being like, well, we can't eat as a family if we don't have X on the table, and just having it be very matter-of-factly, like, this isn't going to be a power struggle. This isn't going to be me butting up against you. It's, hey, this is what we do. And when we're setting those expectations at the very beginning, and really kind of nailing down those jobs, going around in the simplest way possible, even with my teenagers, and I'm sure they roll their eyes and whatever, but, okay. So Andrew's job is to put the cups on the table. Okay. Remind me whose job it is again to put the cups on the table. Oh, Andrew. Okay. Okay. Now if dinner time, who needs to put the cups on the table? And so we're all on the same page. Andrew's doing it. That's his job. He can take ownership of it. And it really is like, we all go around. And so we all have a job. And so we're all saying who is doing what. So it's very clear that, hey, we're all coming to this as the team. And that helps with also just not, like, Andrew's like, well, she gets the easy job. She gets to, like, I haven't heard that yet from my people of, like, comparing the jobs, because they're all met kind of to their ability level. Like, I want them to be challenged a little bit so they can be stretched. But at the same time, like, I'm not going to give them anything that's too hard. And so they're all showing up to the table with something, and not the literal table, but just,
yeah,
you know, there we go.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Cause that was going to be, I was going to ask about that, like, switching up jobs and, how you dish out those jobs, and it is based on ability and strengths and, you know, challenging, but not to a point of being overwhelmed and stressful. It's just one of those things, you know, that you do. And so what the age range, what's oldest and youngest, what ages are your children?
Our oldest is 16 and our youngest is 3.
So the 3-year-old has jobs as well?
Well, he'll come and help. We have not assigned him jobs yet, but he loves to help, because that's what we do, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of who we are, is we all do things together. And so he loves to get somewhere on the table. Like, he loves to help. He'll love to go tell everybody the dinner's ready. He loves to help unload dishes. And by that, I mean, like, he likes to put the silverware in the thing. So he just kind of helps automatically, which is great. And that's kind of I think one of the joys of growing up in a large family and kind of seeing everyone else is helping. This is what we do. Grew up with a servant's heart. Yeah.
This is cool. Like, I'm doing this with the big kids. And
yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess with your kids with FASD as well, like it's everybody. There is nobody, you know, age doesn't come into it. Everybody is part of this, whether it's an officially assigned job or not. You know, this is everybody, not just, it's not mom because she's doing this, and it's not the little one because they're too little. It's everybody. We're a team.
Yeah. And there's definitely grace along with that too, as always. Like, I know that, I mean, even my kids that don't have FASD, there's days when I'm like, they're just having a really hard day. And hey, would you mind stepping up and doing that for them really quick so that they can rest or they can get their work done or whatever they need. And so, like, looking out for each other so that it's not a dictatorship. It's more, we're showing up together. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And you know, and do you find that they start recognizing that in each other as well, and being like, you know, they're preparing for this, you know, this test tomorrow, so I'm gonna get the cups for them.
Yeah, so not our FASD buddies yet. I'm hopeful that we'll get there, like kind of the looking beyond ourselves. But definitely my older ones will look out for each other and help each other out if someone's having a hard time.
Yeah, brilliant. And I'm sure, yeah, it'll get there. It's just longer, isn't it, FASD? It just takes time and repetition and, you know. Yeah, that's really interesting. So I guess this, we're using the example of preparing the table to sit down for dinner, and I guess the same applies to laundry, to just general life, everyday life, really. Like, everybody has their roles. It's a team, and that's how your home works.
Yeah.
And do you... So your oldest with FASD, how old are they now? Is it the teenager?
He's going to be 12 next week.
Okay. So that's, yeah, so it's really interesting to preparing for work. That's where my thought was going with that. I was like, well, yeah. So all of those employability skills, you know, he's been part of this team since as long as he can remember, really, and he's witnessing these actions being carried out and this team mentality in the home. And so, you know, all of these transferable skills are just built into their everyday, and that, you know, that applies to all of them, doesn't it? That's not something that's specific to your kids with FASD by any means, but
yeah, it definitely applies to all of them. We have a few things in place. We do a ticket system at our house, and I think I have seen our kids learn to work hard and to really enjoy it and to want to do things around the house, like to step up and say, can I do this? Or do you have any jobs for me to do? That's been so key, because I feel like that's what employers want. Like, they don't want people sitting, let me say this, as I have employed people and had people come into my home and help, the kids that are sitting around on their phones, I'm like, no, this is not, I don't want to babysit you too. Like, you're supposed to be helping. I need you to take initiative. So we're always talking about those things of taking initiative and stepping up and doing things. So,
yeah. Wow. Yeah. And that's so important. That's so important. And I think that makes a huge difference to not only how your household runs every day, but how their households will run one day as well. Like, it's just.
No, you're good. I agree. I think that it's like a gift that of not only bringing peace to a mama and helping her kind of create that space for herself, but also a gift that we'll keep giving for generations to come. And yeah, so
that's 10 new households that will be transferred to one day.
Yeah.
You know,
that is the hope. Should we wrap it up? Is what I'm thinking.
Children.
Jessica, I wanted to share one thing. I have a guide for your people out there. And it's a self-care guide, and it's really just to help moms kind of walk through, like, hey, what do I need to be filled up and to be able to pour into my people? And how are we going to ask for that? How are we going to make that happen? How do we create a plan for that? So I'm going to share that link with you, and you can share it with
And please with share your people. The links to your website and everything. Like, we will put them all in the description box. We'll make sure that all of our listeners have got all of that information. But my goodness, a self-care guide. Yeah, self-care for mothers, huh? mommy time. That's invaluable, isn't it? And gosh, I wish Claire was here, because she'd be like, tell me all of your secrets, like, I need this.
We can chat anytime.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, please do share all of those things, and we'll make sure that all of our listeners get all of this information. But yeah, it's been absolutely fantastic talking. I feel like I could talk to you all day, but you know, the demands of life. I'm so pleased that we've managed to carve out this time to get you on and have a chat and yeah, learn more about what you do and how your home can function with so many people.
It's exciting.
It's very exciting. There's so many positives to take away from this episode, and you know, I have no doubt that people really respond to it, and I hope that some reach out to you and get in touch, and we'll share all of your information for everybody. So thank you again so much for joining us, Laura. It's been great talking to you.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
Awesome. We'll catch up soon. And thank you, everybody, for listening.